Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by Jack Kane Ford. Find your next Ford Tough vehicle at caneford.com. Woodhill Community Center. Have a hand in the heart of the city. Support their mission with your donations at woodhillcommunitycenter.org. Toyota in Nicholasville Superstore. Online consultants are standing by right now to help you find your next Toyota. Visit Toyota on Nicholasville.com. Lexus of Lexington, home of the best-selling Lexus IS. Find yours today at LexusofLexington.com. Introducing the redesigned CatholicSingles.com, featuring new ways that put the spotlight on the person and their faith, not just a profile picture. For the past 20 years, faithful Catholics have used CatholicSingles.com, and the reimagined CatholicSingles.com website is ready to help single Catholics take the next step in sharing meaningful relationships with other faithful Catholics. Remember, CatholicSingles.com for faith, fellowship, and love.
Welcome to The Dignity of Women, where we dig deep into the vocation and dignity of women in the church, in modern times, and as an answer to the call for a new evangelization. I'm your host, Kimberly Cook. Joining me today is Steve Picorni, who is the author of Redeemed Vision, Setting the Blind Free from the Pornified Culture. Steve is the founder of Freedom Coaching, a one-on-one mentoring system designed to break the attraction to pornified images. After struggling with this compulsion for more than 12 years, by the grace of God, he was set free. Now, Steve helps others to embrace their true identity as beloved sons and daughters of God and to live as a gift for others. And you can learn more about this at freedom-coaching.net or on Instagram at redeemed_vision. Thank you for joining us today, Steve.
It's an honor to be with you, Kimberly.
And I want to say that this book is truly incredible. I read, the entire beast of a book. It's almost 500 pages.
460. And,
it's overwhelming when you first see it, but it is such an easy read and so intriguing, especially the way that you weave in your own experience and your past. That was so compelling for me. I found myself constantly wanting to get to the next part of your story amidst the quality information in between. But I love the way that you weaved that together.
Thank you. As any author would say, the work is only as good as editors are. And so I've had many editors. This is a 14-year project. And my wife, who is the midwife of this project, said it was the hardest delivery she's ever had in her whole life, but very well worth it.
Oh, wow. That is saying a lot. And amen to editors. I completely agree with that. So I want to dig right in. And I want to address first and foremost the father wound, because that was kind of what you led in with. And Steve and I should say, knew each other briefly at our time at Franciscan University, but I knew nothing about your past. And it is really a tough past that you had. Your father attempted suicide when you were young, and that attempted suicide left him with a lot of brain damage, I guess.
That's
you
correct.
Could say, where he wasn't allowed to live in the home. He had to live in an outside facility, and therefore you weren't really able to have that relationship that a son would hope for with his father. And as you know very well, probably from working with so many men, that fatherhood, the lack of a father, that father wound in the family is devastating to young men. So how would you say that that affects your clients or men who are struggling with pornography.
Sure. And I would even go further, and I want to clarify it for our listeners, that this is not just a male issue. This is a male and female issue. I've worked with female clients. They say the estimates are between one third to one half of viewers of visually stimulating pornography are women. And a lot of this does go back to where we're at in society today, right? We're growing up. I think I like to say that my kids are minorities in that they have a father and mother in the home, their biological father and mother in the home. And that's about at least no more than 45% of Americans. And again, above and beyond that, you know, perhaps in Europe and beyond. And so this plays a big part in here. And the heart of what we're looking for, if you take to a spiritual level, right, we want to know our origin. We want to know our destiny. We want to know why we're here. And it's our parents, our father and mother, that are supposed to help fill in those details for us in a very real sense. Our parents are God to us, right? They bring us into existence. They reveal to us what the meaning of life is, what's taught to us or what is not taught to us. And then they kind of are supposed to provide for us that intimacy that we're looking for. And if we don't get that from our God, shall we say, from father and mother, don't misunderstand me here. We're talking about in on a human level here. But then it's going to be very hard to perceive our heavenly father. Okay. The one where obviously is our ultimate origin and destiny. And for myself, growing up without that father, by the time of I was 5 years of age, there was a lot of depression going on. I mean, I was raised Catholic, but it was very, very hard. And I see in the clients I work with, right, a lot of those wounds going on here, a lot of those that's searching, they're trying to figure out what is my identity, what is life really all about, how am I supposed to live this out? And especially when our feelings become eroticized, right, as we hit our hormones, then this search goes into, you know, if we aren't secure in our own identity, aren't secure in the love that we should have gotten from our father and mother, then what ends up happening is we may go looking in the arms of other people, right? And before that, because pornified images are everywhere. These are images that are trying to get us to use another human being. And in a selfish sexual manner, we may find ourselves trapped here. And instead of finding the true intimacy that we're looking for, we get sucked into this and it's false intimacy. And we end up empty with this shame and guilt that's very present. And it affects all of our relationships.
And I have to say that I was shocked recently and before even your book, but in the past few years, to find not only how prevalent pornography was in our culture, but especially among women. I always assumed that pornography was a male issue, a male problem. And beyond that, I guess my idea of pornography was these men who were creepy, you know, kind of it lurking in the shadows, lonely. And, you know, you have this mask that you put on to a certain sin and you assume that the person wearing it is the only person who could be, you know, behind that sin. And so I think your book really brings to light how prevalent it is in households and especially among very young boys and girls that are seeing this. I mean, this is starting at the single digit ages. And I know you said particularly, and I quote from your book, we are literally rewiring women to become more like broken men. And that quote really stuck out to me because again, we've seen this kind of revolution of pornography being okay for women with the popular 50 Shades of Grey and some other popular pornographic movies and books geared specifically towards women. And I think a lot of people who maybe were blind to this would say, well, that's never going to sell, you know, or that's never going to, women aren't going to respond to this. And then the shock of seeing how well those, you know, that media and that the books did, it kind of, you know, for me, it opened my eyes that women are not just struggling with pornography in the sense of, you know, maybe like more soft porn through words, or these, you know, beautiful romance novels, or that kind of, you know, get edgy, but it's much more than that.
Absolutely. And in fact, even more, and I did not talk about it in the book there, but a lot of the, you have especially the creation of a video pornography are actually female directors. And that may sound shocking, but it's, you know, if the programming has been that, you know, in order for a woman to really be a woman, this is the message given off by a lot of the false feminism of our culture, is that in order for a woman to get the love and attention she looks like, has to be like the other men that she sees. And a lot of those men she sees are broken. And so if men are into pornography, then women should be there as well. It's equal opportunity, equal playing field. And again, obviously, this does not uphold the dignity of woman. Why? Because at the heart of a woman is not this desire to want to be seen as sexy. She wants to be seen as loved. She wants to be loved and cared for and cherished. But when she looks around the world and sees only men acting as boys, or shall we say boys walking around in men's bodies, then inevitably, for a lot of them, if they're not secure in their identity, they settle. They settle on thinking that this is what men are, that, you know, if I want to get the love and attention I need to, then I need to be like the women that are posing in pornography publications or online or in videos, or I need to settle with a guy who's involved with pornography. And this itself is crippling to an identity. And it comes back to the identity of who woman is. Woman is one who, one of her great gifts, one of the geniuses of woman, as John Paul the Great would talk about, is this ability to receive love into her, to conceive life and to bear that life and love to the world. And obviously that can work on the physical level, right, with a new child, but it's also on the spiritual and the intellectual and the emotional level where my wife takes something that I do and makes it better. In our household, the phrase is, without Steve, nothing gets done. Without Valerie, nothing gets done well. And so my wife, right, creates something profoundly beautiful. But on the flip side here, if women are called to receive a genuine gift, and they look around the landscape, and it seems like no men they see, starting with their father, aren't proposing genuine gifts, but there is this innate desire, it's planted in there by God, then I'm going to go looking elsewhere to try to get some semblance of it. Even if I know, if I'm honest, it's a counterfeit, it's better to have something and be comfortably miserable than to have nothing and be empty and I'll be alone. And this is the terror of the heart. I mean, that whole notion, especially as I speak to very young groups, to young groups, to middle school or high school, this fear of missing out, right? I don't want to miss out of the relationship. I know that what they're involved with is bad, but, you know, at least I have something. At least I'm around a group. And I think social media helps to, promote this even further. Not to say that social media is bad, we're using it now, but we have to look at what that's about. And then obviously into adult females with, you know, looking at 50 Shades of Grey, because this has been normalized, we've normalized our relationships as being pornified. We think that this is what's all about. I mean, and we see just one other example, right? If we, any movies we're seeing, within the first three episodes, if it's a serial on a TV series, then by the third episode, the main couple, maybe they went on one date, but they're sleeping with each other. This is a pornification. And these things have programmed us. And then because we've been neutralized in the sense of like what is not as exciting, then we have to ramp it up. More and more skin has to be shown. And here, it's not the appropriate way of showing the body, but it steals our joy.
And I think you hit the nail on the head when you said the word settle, because speaking from a collective women's voice in our culture right now, what I hear time and time again is settle. Either she feels that she needs to settle to find happiness or to, you know, marry somebody ultimately because the right person's not coming along, or settle with being alone. Because she isn't finding that hero, you know, that heroic male. And I think the same thing with men. A lot of men are not interested in pursuing a woman to marry. And I think especially with the influence of pornography on our culture, most women's bodies are altered in pornography. So men are holding that up as their norm. And women, in the same hand, are striving to achieve that physical reality in their own bodies, which is anything but real. And this is slavery on both sides. It's a false ideal. And as you said, is this helping build up the dignity of women?
It's the definitive answer. And if you look at from this perspective, I didn't even mention this in the book, but like the old Playboy bunny models, right? I want to say old. They're still out, I guess, through Playboy. But you have, think of an ordinary bunny, right? They're cute, fuzzy rabbits that are household, you know, pets, but they also, you know, on contact can get pregnant, and then 6 months later, after they deliver, you know, the first baby, they can get pregnant again. Six weeks later, not six months. But the ironic thing about Playboy is all the women that we're seeing, a vast majority of them, are sterilized either temporarily through the contraceptive pill or permanently sterilized. And we have to ask the question: is this a good? If we have to change somebody based on who they really are, is that loving? And we have to say no, because we have to learn how to accept a woman for who she is. And this brings to one of the main points in the book, that what pornography is doing, what the pornified culture is doing to us, is blinding us. It's keeping us from actually seeing each other as persons. And if we can't see each other as persons, it's very difficult, if not impossible, to enter into the genuine relationships we want. If you think from a woman's perspective, again, I have a wife and two daughters and one in heaven, so I'm surrounded by women and learning how to love women. It is relationship that is the most important thing. It is that belonging, that sense of connection, of closeness that women want. And I would argue that men want that as well, except we might express it differently. And if we're inhibited from this, from the cultural milieu of pornography, of being failing to see each other in that same vision, and even beyond that vision of what Adam and Eve had from the beginning, that divine vision, then if we recognize this in ourselves, we need to cry out like the blind man Bartimaeus, "I want, Lord Jesus, Master, I want you to see." And if we do this, if we enter into this, He is going to give us a redeemed vision. But oftentimes He's going to allow the things that we've gotten into to kind of to grow, so that we see how far we are from that. And this so we feel very carefully and very intimately the pain here, and know something's missing. I am made for more.
And coming from the feminist movement myself, my idea was always that I could dress or act any way I chose. And if a man couldn't handle the way he processed that, it was his problem. And that attitude is certainly part of the problem. But you address the compulsion of porn as changing not only the way men see women as objects, the way they view themselves as incapable of healthy relationships, but also, in a paradoxical catch-22, pornography changes the way women view themselves, particularly in adolescence. And I think this resonates with almost every woman who's probably hearing this, feeling ugly, unworthy, not physically attractive. I mean, these could be the most beautiful women. You know, many of us have had friends or struggled with ourselves where we just feel like, wow, this friend of mine is so gorgeous and she kind of has everything going for her. How in the world can she see herself as ugly? And, you know, look at these magazines or watch these movies and feel like she needs to change her hair, wear more makeup or change her body or lose 10 pounds. Or, I mean, it seems like women so often, especially in adolescence, are constantly trying to change their bodies. And where that doesn't just come from an internal, you know, cry for something more, to want to change yourself. It's quite the opposite, what God planted internally within us. And so I think it's pretty sad looking back on that feminist movement. It was all about this unity, but really there was no union. There was no communion. It was very destructive in that sense. And what we were trying to protect, you know, this freedom, this femininity, it actually was
slavery.
Destroying femininity.
Indeed. Absolutely. And I think especially as we see, I mean, we're very conscious of this, you know, having daughters. And this mission is very near and dear to my heart, because raising daughters, my daughters currently are about 8 and 6 years of age. They're going to, you know, we can control things in our home, but, you know, to a very real extent, but they're out at school, right? They have playmates and they're going to talk. And especially the fact that, you know, especially if the average age of exposure to pornography is between 8 and 11 years of age. Well, my daughter's going to be around people very soon who are doing this. And especially if she's interested in a boy, as normally it's going to come up here, it would be a rare thing if that boy had not seen pornography. And that's going to affect the way those relationships come up and the way she views herself. And again, a lot of this, as you just mentioned, coming from the culture, the idea of freedom to do whatever I want. No, that's called license. We're called the freedom for excellence. But many times, because our culture says it's laissez-faire, do whatever you want, there is no standard whatsoever. The only standard is whatever. And in our heart of hearts, we want more. We want something more. We want to, and for a woman to be seen as beautiful, as good, to be worthy of affection, and also to know that somebody's going to fight for them and win their heart and continually win their heart. But that's not the message of pornography. Pornography is that of to take, to abuse, to enslave.
Right. And I want to bring this around to Redeemed Vision and how what you talk about in your book, you know, especially getting towards the end when you talk about setting the blind free from the pornified culture, because the big question, I think, that is in the hearts of many people that are enslaved by pornography, that suffer from this compulsion to pornography, is, will I ever be free of this? Is it possible to be free? Or is it just, as you talk about in your book, a management system, you know, and all of these things that they might be hearing, like, well, just don't look at it, just don't do it, just count the days or whatever. And I think it's important to clarify, first of all, that natural attraction in this way is not bad. You say in your book that it's the raw material for true conjugal love, and that a person is a gift. And for us to turn away from beauty is not the answer. To turn away from a beautiful woman or something that attracts us, this is not the answer. And I think that so often we hear these kind of band-aid solutions as the answer to pornography. And I think it's different than just telling an alcoholic not to go into a bar. This is a much different animal. So can you explain how you work with your clients and how, for your own self, you really worked, especially through art, divine art, to become free of this by
let me give a little story. Okay, and I talk about this in the book. I think it's chapter 8. Chapter 9. There's a 9-year-old boy was at a park, and at the park, he's with his family. He finds a picture of a gentleman's club, an advertisement. And there's two naked women in this, and he immediately drops the picture. He didn't even touch it, actually. Goes to his older sister and says, "I found a yucky picture." And the older sister says, "Go talk to your older brother." And he does. And the older brother says, "Okay, show it to me." So he goes he does. And the older brother immediately takes it and rips it up and throws it away and says, "You don't need to be looking at it." And for a vast majority of us who would, people, you know, anybody in before the internet, basically, we would have taken that image and we would have hit it. It would have been like buried treasure. And so we got to ask the question, how is a boy able to do that? How was the older brother able to rip it up immediately? It was because they had been raised in an environment where the body, and specifically the naked human body, was normalized to actually see the human body for who and what the body is. Because the truth is way more interesting. The truth is way more beautiful. But the way in which we've been programmed the other way. We've been programmed to think that pornography is beautiful. We've been programmed to think that the ordinary human body, the ordinary naked human body, is like bad porn. And this is the counterfeit. And these are the images and these are the ideas that are being just proliferated everywhere. And you've got a lot of Christians who have bought into this. Well, the beautiful thing here is we have some answers for that, okay? Because the church is not afraid of the body. Why? Because God created the body. The body is good. And we also want to say is our vision is good. We are created to see. We're not created to stick our heads in the sand. And when we are trained to actually see beauty, to be programmed into what is real beauty, to be able to see the body as God has created us to do this, what happens is pornography becomes like a mosquito, an annoying mosquito, or lustful images, or even somebody trying to get us to lust after them. It's like an annoying mosquito. And one of the beautiful treasures of the church that has been covered over, pun intended, in many of our churches, or not even revealed in our churches, is sacred art, particularly art where the body is exposed appropriately. So it can be regular art, right? You have the birth of Venus, for instance, by Venus de Milo, right? Showing, yes, there's a naked woman there, but it's not pornography. Or you have the David, one of the most glorious statues everywhere, being able to see the glory of the human body, of the male human body, and no one in their right mind calls that pornography. And because there's strict, distinctive notions of what is beauty, of radiance, of wholeness, of balance in those images that fails to be present in pornified images. And then on the religious side, right, we have tons of these beautiful images, especially of Our Lady breastfeeding Jesus. And this is a beautiful insight into the goodness of the body, because take the issue of pornography. Most men have been programmed by the time they're at least 8 years old that a woman's breasts are for his pleasure. And that's the lie. No, women's breasts are beautiful, but they're also functional. But if we've never had the opportunity even to see, to be trained in this, to look in a good way, in a healthy way, with healthy images, we're going to fall for the counterfeit. But here's the good news. If we have been programmed by the counterfeit, we can be reprogrammed. There are things in our brains called neural pathways where we can change the neural pathways and learn how to see. And it's specifically using art, using sacred art, that is one of the main means of doing this. And what happens in seeing true beauty and being programmed in this, there's not guilt and shame, Kimberly. There is joy. There is beauty. And even more, we're looking for intimacy. Well, guess what? Those ones, especially in sacred art that we see there, we can actually have a relationship with them, that the Word made flesh and the mother of the Word incarnate, we are able to have a relationship with, to enter into conversation with them, but also enter into union with them, beginning here on earth, beginning in Holy Mass. So this is a profound mystery. And if we have not been having these images in our homes or images in our churches, well, guess what? May I be a rallying cry for you in your life, but first off in your heart, come to learn how to see. And in seeing, we will be set free to love.
And I have to say that this is just profound. The idea to use sacred art to retrain the brain from this pornified idea is beautiful. It's absolutely stunning, especially as somebody who studied art for many, many years and has been to the Vatican and seen the Sistine Chapel and all of Michelangelo's glorious works in Italy. There is something at the core of your being that comes alive when you see that. And I thought it was funny that you said one of the remedies, and I was kind of waiting through the whole book for what you were going to say. And when you got to the sacred art as the cure, and you said even to spend 5 to 10 minutes a day gazing upon the beauty of the image of Mary breastfeeding Jesus, which is an image that I've only come to know since having kids and, you know, came to discover this and see it as truly beautiful. And I've encountered many women through my journey that even giving birth to children are just unable to allow themselves to breastfeed because they feel like their breasts are not for that, or it feels disgusting or dirty to them. And even a quick story about a Protestant friend who was in her, in her Sunday service, and she was covered up, breastfeeding her child during the service. And the pastor called her out in the middle of the service and said, "We all know what you're doing under there." And, you know, she was just utterly shocked. Like, "I'm nursing my child." So I think that, yes, we've become so portified that it's distracting even sometimes to people when you're nursing your child. It's almost like you're trying to turn them on or something. And I feel like that, in essence, is the real perversion, you know, that to show a nursing mother, to see her in anything other than nurturing her child, is just such a perversion of our culture. So I just found it incredible that one of your remedies was for a man to spend 5 to 10 minutes a day gazing upon that image.
It's now profound.
How have men responded when you recommended that?
I have the privilege of working with some of the most broken. I only work with those who are ready to go to work. I don't want somebody I'm gonna have to fight with. They know they're broken. They need help. And we especially go through their history, and it's like, I like to call it wading through a septic tank. It's just ugly. I don't like doing it, but there's a lot of healing that happens there because we work on repairing left and right brain. We repair the emotions. And it's just, it's dark. It's not fun. It's but there's healing that happens in that. But as we transfer over to this whole discussion on vision and how to see the body and the and just the lies about what we're actually capable of, and that through the truth is that by grace we can see and see with love, and it's not trying to put ourselves into an occasion of sin, but really putting ourselves in the occasion of genuine beauty. The lights come on, Kimberly. It is profound. I mean, because I'm there's such darkness in the beginning, and then the light bulbs come on, and they're like, "Oh my gosh," or shall we say most reverently, "Oh my God, I have been looking for this in all of these false images my whole life. And now here it is. And these chains, like what happened to me, these chains hit the floor." I mean, I see men, grown men, strong men, break down crying, weeping in beauty because they've been lied to their whole life. And then in entering in and bringing this, like, especially one of the things I talk to people about is, and this may challenge some of our listeners, but I bears listening one of the things we can do along with the vision piece, right? And being Catholic, one of the most beautiful things that we have is obviously the sacrament of the Eucharist, but Eucharistic adoration, where the naked Christ is exposed to us. And this is exactly how he wants to be. He wants to be naked and vulnerable and open to us. So literally in adoration, going there and literally calling up these pornified images. Christ has already been there when we were in the room using pornography lustfully. So why not go and bring those up consciously, give them over to him, so in spiritual chemotherapy, he can burn them away, create new neural pathways by seeing this, right? And in adoration, it's a safe place to do that. And then as an added bonus, right, we bring these images of our of Maria Lactans, of Mary breastfeeding Jesus, we bring those to adoration as well. And in here, it's a family affair, and being able to see. So as we are letting go of the false images of, especially of a woman's body, we're being inundated with the true images of the body. And when we do this in practice, I like to say this in classroom work, okay, and may the chapel be your classroom, we're able to go out to the world, which is the point. It's like you're getting your degree, right, in school and going out to the world and serving the world. We're able to look at all people with love. And this is what we're called to. And it is the sight of a man who can really see, that can penetrate, have a penetrating gaze into the eyes of every woman, a woman who may be looking down or looking down on herself, or a woman who thinks she's all that, to penetrate with truth, with light, with love, that can move her heart to conversion, move her heart to recognize her own dignity, her worth, her value. And this is how we change the world, right? If it's Mother Teresa said, if you want to change the world, you know, smile. Well, if you want to change the world in this day and age where we were, it's not too far off from where Mother Teresa was, learn how to see, because it's only by learning how to see will we learn how to love. And the world needs this love more than anything. It needs this redeemed vision.
Well, I want to thank our guest, Steve Pokorny, the author of Redeemed Vision. Again, you can find Steve at freedom-coaching.net or on Instagram at redeemed_vision. And I hope that what he shared today is just a little open door to the hope that there is in reclaiming the redeemed vision.
An honor, Kimberly. Thank you so much.
From the pornified culture and setting the blind free. Thank you, Steve.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media. Find more about us at breadboxmedia.com.